Well, some time ago, I gave a message on is Michael Yahshua. And I think, and I believe that I was adamant about proving that Michael was not Yahshua. Well, the second time around that I've reviewed it, I was not so adamant about that. And I think I had more of an open mind in reviewing this and looking at the scriptures and what they say. And I think what I'll present today is a more balanced approach, maybe some deeper understanding. I think that maybe Yahweh opened up my mind a little bit to His truth rather than my own perception, my own thoughts. So I wanted to go over this subject matter. Is Michael Yahshua? And of course, when I say Michael, I'm talking about, as we understand, the archangel of the Scripture. And Genesis 16, let's turn there and go back to find out something about Yahshua. In Genesis 16, in verse 11, here's an angel that is approaching Hagar and helping her to understand that her child will be blessed, but that child will not be blessed like Isaac would be blessed. But in verse 10, starting in verse 10, moreover, the angel of Yahweh said to her, I will greatly multiply your descendants so that they shall be too many to count. The angel of Yahweh said to her further, behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son, and you shall call his name Ishmael, because Yahweh has given heed to your affliction. Now it goes on further down to 13. It says, then she called the name of Yahweh who spoke to her. You are an El who sees, for she said, have I even remained alive after seeing him? She relates to us, this account relates to us, that she was talking to none other than, as we understand it, Yahshua. Yahshua is the Dabar, the mediator between man and Yahweh, the Ancient of Days, in the Old Testament. And when Yahweh spoke, it was actually Yahshua. And I think this is clearly proven, and this is something that we do hold to be true. And we have literature on this. But it goes a little deeper. Let's go over to Psalms 98. And this will probably be more of an approach as a Bible study. But I was wondering, you know, what can we get out of this? I think the idea, at least for me, is that, I share this with you so that you'll go away with it as well, but that we have to have an open mind on some of these things so that Yahweh can work with our mind and our heart, and that we shouldn't walk in our own stubbornness. And I think at times we do. I know for myself I do, and have in the past. Psalm 98, verses 1 through 3. Oh, sing to Yahweh a new song, for he has done wonderful things. His right hand and his holy arm have gained the victory for him. Yahweh has made known his salvation. He has revealed his righteousness in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his loving kindness and his faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our Yahweh. Now, when it says here, his right hand and his holy arm, I think that is an allusion to Yahshua. And we can see in Isaiah 48, to kind of back this idea up, Isaiah 48 and verse 12, it says, listen to me, O Jacob, even Israel whom I have called. I am he, I am the first, and I am the last. Surely my hand founded the earth. My right hand spread out the heavens. When I called to them, they stand together. Now, who made heaven and earth? Certainly, Yahweh is the creator. The Ancient of Days made all of this possible. But how did he do that? In thinking back to Adam and Eve and how he created Eve, he actually took a part of Adam, a rib, and made Eve. And I think when it's described that Yahweh's right arm and his right hand has saved, I think he's actually maybe referring to a part of him is in Yahshua, that has actually made Yahshua. In Hebrews 1, let's go there for a moment. Hebrews 1 and starting in verse 1. Yahweh, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. Through who? It says through his Son. In verse 3, it says, he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become as much better than the angels. I think that's significant. Much better than the angels. Because aren't even the angels created? As he has inherited a more excellent name than they. In Colossians 1, Colossians 1 and verse 15, going through 19. Speaking of Yahshua, he is the image of the invisible El, the firstborn of all creation, and by him all things were created. This is pretty black and white in the sense that it's very, very clear what's being said here. It's not a parable, you know, hidden meaning or anything like that. It says, for by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on the earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is also the head of the body, the assembly, and he is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, so that he himself will come to have first place in everything. Verse 19, for it was the Father's good pleasure for all the fullness to dwell in him. And we know that that the Spirit fully dwelled in him on earth. He had the fullness of the Spirit, whereas we get a portion of the Spirit. And it helps open up our mind, as long as we're not closed-minded and have our own bent on a certain item. This could be made out to be a doctrine. And there are those that hold that Michael is Yahshua. I think one thing that we have to keep in mind is that this is not necessarily a salvational issue. This is not something that's going to prevent or keep us from entering the kingdom, whether we have one understanding or another. But I think it's important that we look at an overview of this and consider what is being shown in the Scripture, and hopefully we get some spiritual insight into this for our own lives, and that we can be better able to discern and to search out the Scriptures to see whether these things are true or not. Going back to Proverbs 8, this has been pointed out before. I think it's good to look at it, and I think this helps us to understand that Yahweh and the Son are not one individual. I mean, we've already read some scriptures where the Father is above and over the Son. Though they have the same nature, they have the Son had the fullness of the Father. That doesn't mean he was the Father. And you find scriptures that talks about, in reference to like the Ancient of Days. That's really a reference to the Almighty. It's not a reference to Yahshua. And in Psalms, I believe, it talks about the light within the light. I think we see the light in Yahshua as emanating from the Father. But Yahshua is not the Father. But he is the exact representation of the Father. As you understand the Son, you'll understand the Father, because the Son did the Father's will. But in Proverbs 8, I'll just read through this, starting in verse 22, going through verse 31. Yahweh possessed me at the beginning, and this is right out of the New American Standard, but it says that Yahweh possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old, from everlasting I was established, from the beginning, from the earliest times of the earth. When there was no depths, I was brought forth. Kind of sounds similar to John 16:28. As, in fact, hold your place here, and we can go over there real quickly. John 16:28. Notice how Yahweh, or Yahshua rather, doesn't equate himself as the Father. He specifically says in verse 27, "For the Father himself loves you, because you have loved me and have believed that I came forth from the Father." He didn't come forth from himself. Verse 28, he reiterates it. "I came forth from the Father." And so, when it says over here in Proverbs 8:24, when it says, "I was brought forth," isn't this somewhat of an allusion to Yahshua? It says, "When there were no springs abounding it with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth." For the creation to take place, Yahshua first had to be created. Verse 26, "While he had not yet made the earth and the fields, nor the first dust of the world, when he established the heavens, I was there. When he inscribed on the circle of the face of the deep, when he made firm the skies above, when the springs of the deep became fixed, when he set for the sea its boundary, so that the water would not transgress its command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master workman. And I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the world, his earth, and having my delight in the sons of men." Now in verse 30 we see that he was beside him as a master workman. Now this is talking about wisdom, but isn't Yahshua even referred to as wisdom? I think he is, and when we see this master craftsman working beside Yahweh, evidently, it's referring to, then I think we can also see another allusion to Yahshua. And if you think about it as like an architect, a designer, I think this is how we can look at Yahweh. Yahweh is the architect. There's no question about it. He is the designer. And Yahshua, he had as his craftsman. He told Yahshua, or it's like he laid out the plans for all creation and showed Yahshua and said, "Go ahead." And Yahshua created, and he created all things. Even the angels are created, and he created them. Nothing was created that wasn't created by Yahshua, except that Yahshua was from the beginning. So how is he from the beginning? Like the arm, like the hand, literally a part of Yahweh. And just wanted to go over that because I think there are some out there that think that Yahweh and Yahshua are the same person, same individual, and they really aren't. Yahshua prayed to the Father. He came forth from the Father, but he is not the Father. He is the Son. Let's go over to Jude and get into the question, is Michael Yahshua? I had to lay some foundation there for some of the things we're going to take a look at. Maybe we can do a part two on this. I'm not sure if we're going to get through all of this today. But in Jude, now Jude is a small book. In fact, it's only one chapter. They didn't break it down into two chapters. But Jude 1 and verse 1 and 2, you'll notice that Yahshua the Messiah is mentioned. In verse 1. In verse 2, he's mentioned again, but also with the Father. It says, "Jude, a bondservant of Yahshua the Messiah, and brother of James," evidently a brother of Yahshua even, but as James was a brother to Yahshua. It says, "To those who are called, beloved in Elohim the Father," or Yahweh the Father, "and kept for Yahshua the Messiah." Now if you go down to verse 4, again, Jude, who should know whether or not Yahshua is Michael, kept kept referring to Yahweh and Yahshua. Again, there's that distinction between the two. In verse 4, for certain persons who have crept in unnoticed, those who were long ago before marked out for this condemnation, unrighteous persons who turn the grace of our Elohim into licentiousness and deny our only master and sovereign Yahshua the Messiah. Now here Yahweh is mentioned by himself in verse 5. Now I desire to remind you that though you know all things once for all, that Yahweh, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe. Their unbelief manifested in disobedience. Now something else is mentioned here, and that is angels. In verse 6, angels are mentioned. And angels are also mentioned in verse 8. Angelic majesties, angels, spirit beings. Now, in Jude 9, we come down to where Michael is mentioned. Now, Michael is not just mentioned here. He's mentioned elsewhere, and we'll take a look at that. But this is in reference to something we don't necessarily have today. We don't have a record of the argument between Satan and the archangel Michael, as he's referred to here. An archangel basically has the meaning of chief angel over other angels. And there was even, we can look in Daniel a little bit later, but don't want to get too far ahead here. I want to point out that Michael says to Satan, Yahweh rebuke you. Now he doesn't say, I, Yahweh, rebuke you. He doesn't say, I am Yahweh and I'm rebuking you. He just says, Yahweh rebuke you. Simple as that. I'm not going to deal with you, Satan. Yahweh's going to deal with you. And that's how he leaves it. And I checked the Aramaic, an Aramaic scriptures on this and found that it is there. And I did that because I found out that the earliest Aramaic manuscript is around the 4th century. Interestingly enough, there are things that were added or deleted after the 4th century in the Greek manuscripts, but before that time, the earlier Greek manuscripts basically concur with Aramaic. But what we get into a problem with is some of the wording, because Aramaic has a number of words for like one item, and it makes a lot more sense. And some of the Greek writings that we find, like, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Well, in the Aramaic, the word there in the Aramaic actually can be for camel, can actually be for rope as well, whereas the Greek, it's only for a camel. And so as it was translated, they chose the wrong definition, it looks like. And there's numerous examples like that. And hopefully we can go over some of those at a later time, because I do find it interesting. I'm actually starting to write or do parentheses in certain verses to point this out to myself as I'm going through, to make sure that I realize, well, this in the Aramaic actually reads a little bit better. And in every case that is brought out, it reads better. So, just a little sideline there. We do believe that the New Testament was originally in a Semitic dialect, Hebrew or Aramaic. So I point out this because we're gonna take a look at another place in Zechariah, but wanted to go over some of these names and what they mean. Michael means who is like El, and I think that can be posed as a question, just like Micah, who is like Yah, could be posed as a question. Now Gabriel, I think, as we see another archangel, though it doesn't necessarily specify that he's an archangel that I'm aware of, but his name means mighty like El. But the reason I point this out is because Michael is pointed to, and his name is pointed to, as proof that he is Yahshua, because, well, who else to be like El? Well, Micah's name means who is like Yah. I would think that would be even more fitting, but Micah is not Yahshua. And so some of the argumentation here can be looked at and kind of considered, but Let's go over to, while you're here, let me just read Jude 1:9 out of the New Living Translation. I think it gives a little bit better clarification of the wording. It says in the New Living Translation, "But even Michael, one of the mightiest of the angels, did not dare accuse Satan of blasphemy, but simply said, 'Yahweh rebuke you.' This took place when Michael was arguing with Satan about Moses' body." I wish we had that account, but I guess, you know, Yahweh has seen fit that we don't necessarily need it. But there is another scripture that we can look at. It's in Zechariah 3 and verse 2. Now there's a few here. It says that Joshua was here, the high priest. It says that there's an angel of Yahweh here. And it says that Satan is here. And it also says that Yahweh spoke. Now, was that speaking from the angel that was there? Or is it speaking from Yahweh? That I'm not sure. But as we read this in 1 through 2, we can kind of think about these things. Says, "When he showed me Joshua, the high priest, standing before the angel of Yahweh, and Satan standing on his right hand to accuse him, Yahweh said to Satan, 'Yahweh rebuke you, Satan. Indeed, Yahweh who has chosen Jerusalem rebuke you. And this, is this not a brand plucked from the fire?'" Now, of course, what Satan was trying to do is trying to get Yahweh to just reject Israel altogether. And Yahweh wasn't going to go for that. Now, I looked at an interlinear, and I think that this is an appropriate reading. I think the New Living Translation also brings this out a little bit better, a little bit clearer, and is matching with what I saw in the interlinear. But it says in the New Living Translation, in verse 2 of Zechariah chapter 3, "I, Yahweh, reject your accusation, Satan. Yes, Yahweh, who has chosen Jerusalem, rebukes you. This man is like a burning stick that has been snatched from a fire." So it didn't look very hopeful, but Yahweh has a way of turning hope from a terrible situation. And, of course, Israel had found themselves in a terrible situation because of their sins, because of their blaming and other problems that they had towards Yahweh. But I bring this up because if you just think back to Jude 1:9, Michael, I think, would have taken, I think we can reason that he would have taken the stance and would have said more, "Look, I, Yahweh, rebuke you," if he could have said that. But he just said, "Yahweh, rebuke you." Whereas we do find Yahweh rebuking Satan, he basically says, "I, Yahweh, reject your accusation, Satan. Yes, I, Yahweh, who has chosen Jerusalem, rebukes you." And that's basically what the Hebrew says, as far as I can tell, without knowing the actual grammar, without going into the wording, literal wording, which, you know, I've been wanting to learn a little bit more about the Hebrew. And it's scriptures like this that encourage that type of studying and encourage that type of learning to better be able to understand, because some of the translations are not done by Hebrew scholars. They are done by, you know, scholars, but they have a limited knowledge of some of these things. It's best to have some different translations at our disposal. Well, let's go on to Daniel 2, or Daniel 10, rather. Let's go a little bit deeper in something that I saw this time that I didn't see before. Daniel 10 and verse 13. In fact, let's read 13. "The prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Withstanding who? That's the question we're going to need to answer. was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left there with the kings of Persia. Now, it does say one of the chief princes. It doesn't say the chief prince. Over in over in verse 21, though, it says, Michael, your prince. So that can be looked at a little bit there. Let's back up to 10 and verse 1. We'll read through this and see if we can get a better understanding. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. And the message was true and one of great conflict, but he understood the message and had an understanding of the vision. So we see this as a vision that he's having. In those days, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 entire weeks. I imagine that's not a Hebrew idiom for 3 partial weeks, but 3 entire weeks, just like the, 3 days, 3 nights. But in verse 3, it says, I did not eat any tasty food, nor did meat or wine enter my mouth, nor did I use any ointment at all until the entire 3 weeks were completed. On the 24th day of the first month, while I was by the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lift up my eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man dressed in linen, whose waist was girded with a belt of pure gold of Uphaz. His body was also like beryl. His face had the appearance of lightning. His eyes were like flaming torches. Do you remember an example like this anywhere else in Scripture? His arms and feet like the gleam of polished bronze, and the sound of his words like the sound of a tumult. Now I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, while the men were with me did not see the vision. Nevertheless, a great dread fell on them, and they ran away to hide themselves. So I was left alone and saw this great vision. Yet no strength had was left in me, for my natural color turned to a deathly pale, and I retained no strength. Verse 9, but I heard the sound of his words, and as soon as I heard the sound of his words, I fell into a deep sleep on my face with my face to the ground. Then, behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees, and said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I am about to tell you, and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. And when you had spoken this word to me, I stood up. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling. So a very traumatic situation here. But in verse 12 it says, then he said to me, do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before Yahweh, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words. And then we get into this that we read already, the prince of the kingdom of Persia. Now that prince, we understand, was a satanic being, a spiritual being. This is not the actual an individual man, prince of Persia. But this was a spiritual demonic force, evidently one of the stronger demons that was under Satan. But it says that this prince of the kingdom of Persia was withstanding me. Now, who is me? It says, along with me, that Michael came. Now, if you go back and we look at this description of this, and he's described as, in verse 5, as a certain man dressed in linen whose waist was girded with gold and so on and forth. But that same example is found in Revelation 1:14, and it's an example of Yahshua. Now, what's interesting is when we go down to verse 10, it says, a hand touched me, and then the words were spoken to him. That is not necessarily this individual that we see up in verse 5 and 6. And I say that because at the end of verse 9, you have a change. You had some time that went past, it looks like, because Daniel basically passed out. And he was awoken by a hand, but that hand was not necessarily from this polished bronze individual with his words that sounded like a tumult, large, great sound. And it's interesting, too, that his words are not described here. He may have said, Daniel, I'm Yahshua. You do not write down that I've said this, but you can write down what my voice is like. I mean, that could have happened. We don't know. We don't have the words here of this being, which I think is most likely Yahshua, because it's Yahshua in Revelation 1:14. But in verse 10 it says, then, and we can assume that there's been some time that's passed, then behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. And he said to me, O Daniel. And so when we come down to verse 13, the prince of the king of Persia was withstanding me for 21 days. Then behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me. You know, then I was able to overcome, is basically what's being said here. But here is another spiritual being who evidently isn't this individual up in verse 5 and 6, but could be Michael. I mean, that's the reality. As we read through this, it could actually be Michael that is referred to here. And when I recognized that, I just had to stop and go, wow, I didn't see that before. And it made me think, and I realize this and some other things we can look at, why there are literally millions in the world today that do believe that Michael is Yahshua. There are some major organizations out there that hold this to be true. But what I'm discovering is it's not so black and white. It's somewhat of a gray area. I mean, this tends to lean credence or evidence, but other things tend to take away from that evidence. So it's a balance. We're looking at some things that it could go this way or it could go that way. And thankfully, we don't see it as a salvational issue, because it would be a tough one to really narrow down to one or the other, I think. But I bring that up because I thought it was very interesting. And kind of started to change my thinking on this. But in Daniel 12:1, we see that Michael is referred to as a great prince, and as we know, archangel basically means like a chief angel, a great angel. Now, going into Daniel 10 and verse 13, we do see that Michael is one of the chief princes. And I'm thinking, well, then that must be leaning towards the idea that there are other archangels. Though Scripture really only says that Michael is the archangel. He's a warrior of an archangel, whereas Gabriel, I think we see as an archangel as well, though it doesn't say it, is more of a spokesman. And it's been related by some scholars that in Daniel 10 here, this may be Gabriel that's standing and speaking. But, you know, and maybe there's some scripture to back that up. In Daniel 9, and verse 21, it says the man Gabriel. And here, in verse 5 of 10, it says a certain man was dressed and had gold, and his face is the appearance of lightning and so forth. So we get into some of these things, and it's not so evident that it's one way or the other. It's kind of, you know, back and forth now. How do we look at it? How do we define it? How do we know for sure? In Joshua 5, let's go back there. Now, Michael, being an archangel, basically means like a chief prince, but is Michael the prince of princes? Now, this is where we get back to the idea that Yahshua created angels. He created all things. And I think we see this that in Scripture. Joshua chapter 5 and verse 14. Now here, Joshua, of course, they're coming into the land to conquer. And Joshua is approached by someone. Now, notice Joshua's courage and stance here. He's as bold as a lion, as far as we can tell. Verse 13, now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, are you for us or for our adversaries? Now, if somebody has a sword drawn, I'm not necessarily going to go up to him and go, hey, are you on my side or are you on this other side? But Joshua did. So he's pretty pretty bold as far as an individual goes. In verse 14 it says, he said, no, rather indeed come now, rather I indeed, this angel, says, come now. He says, no, rather I indeed come now as captain of the hosts of Yahweh. Now this angel is referred to as the host of Yahweh, or the captain of the host of Yahweh. And it goes on, it says, Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said to him, what has my master to say to his servant? He evidently recognized who this was. Verse 15, it says, the captain of Yahweh's host said to Joshua, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. Just like Moses was told at the burning bush. And wasn't that Yahweh? But wasn't it Joshua, the mediator between Yahweh and man at that time? It says Joshua did so. But here is the captain of the hosts of Yahweh. Now when we think of hosts, we can see that the host is a number of things. Let's go back to Genesis 2 and 1. Genesis 2 and chapter 1. Ryrie's has a note in here that's interesting and kind of brings up the idea that hosts can mean a couple of different things. As we find in Semitic language, you find words can mean more than one thing many, many times. In fact, some words can mean as many as 10 different things. So it's quite the language to learn. In fact, I heard on the radio one professor of Aramaic was talking, and he said, you can study it for 25 years and still not really be fluent in it. And there are so many dialects, and it's a whole range of avenues that a person could go down. But it's similar, very similar to the Hebrew. In Genesis 2:1, it says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed and all their hosts. Now that word hosts, Ryrie brings out, he says in Nehemiah 9:6, the same Hebrew word depicts stars. And in 1 Kings 22:19, it refers to angels. Here, it probably means simply all the things that Elohim created. But the point is that it doesn't look like Michael is being referred to anywhere as the angel of hosts, whereas Joshua, I think we do see him as the angel of hosts. And as angel of hosts, or Yahweh of hosts, rather, then he is rightly so, because he created all the hosts. And that's the point of that. Let's go over to Revelation, and we can get some revelation here. Revelation 12. And verse 7. And there is a war in heaven, Michael and his angels waging war with the dragon. The dragon and his angels waged war. This Michael is a real warrior. Verse 8, and it says, and they were not strong enough, for there was no longer a place found for them in heaven. And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, now the salvation of the power and of the kingdom of our master, our sovereign, and the authority of his Messiah have come. For the accuser of our brethren has been thrown down, he who accuses them before Elohim, day and night. Now, it doesn't say that Michael here is Messiah. It just relates that the Messiah is being spoken of here, and Yahweh, and of course, Satan, and also Michael are involved with this. It could be said that here Yahshua is pointing to something else. Michael did something else. There's something a little more profound we can look at in Revelation 6. You may have remembered in Daniel 12:1, Michael, who stands as a protector of Yahweh's people, was at that time at the last days, during the time of tribulation, going to be doing that. Well, if we look at Revelation 6 and 16, it says, "And they said to the mountains and to the rocks, fall on us and hide us during this time of tribulation." It says, "And from the presence of him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of their wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" So here Yahshua is involved with what? Bringing tribulation. Not only does he come and stand on the Mount of Olives, but before that, he is involved with the wrath that is poured out from Yahweh. Again, he's being a bit of a mediator here. He's doing what Yahweh has told him to do. And I think both of them are working to bring wrath on the earth. This is brought out here. It says the day of their wrath. They're both involved. Now, if we go back to Daniel 12 and verse 1, you know, the initial way to look at that is, well, Daniel is standing doing something else at that time. But is that really what it's saying? It says, "Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise, and there will be such a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time." Does that sound familiar? Matthew 24, Yahshua said that. But it says, "And at that time your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued." Now, just like we looked at Daniel 10, and we see Yahshua being described there as he's described in Revelation 1 and verse 14, and yet He's not the one necessarily talking to Daniel, because it breaks there. Daniel passes out, some time passes, and then he gets a hand and is starting to be talked to, but not talked to by these words of in a great tumult, necessarily. It doesn't necessarily say that. But here we find that Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And then there's a break. What's he arising to do? You think he's arising to protect the people, but it doesn't necessarily say that. But it does say that there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation. Could that be Yahshua? That is Michael Yahshua here? This is another one of those areas where you can look at it in two different ways and not really come to maybe one or the other as a conclusion, but it's being offered there. But when I first went through this before, I thought, okay, here's the proof. Michael's not Yahshua, because he's doing one thing over here, and at the same time, Michael is doing something else over here. But I think I was forcing an interpretation, my own interpretation. Because it doesn't necessarily say that. Though it could be implied, so it stands that it could be. But on the other hand, it stands that it might not be. Am I confusing you yet? I'm trying not to. But I do find this interesting, and I think we have to take the stand that we can't necessarily take a dogmatic view upon this, because it just isn't that clear. Now, we can get into another area here where Yahshua returns with the trumpet of an archangel. And it's been brought out that, well, this shows that Yahshua is Michael because of the voice of an archangel. And that's found in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 16, where it says, "For Yahweh himself, or the Master, rather, himself, will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, with the trumpet of Elohim, and the dead Messiah will rise first." Well, you know, trumpet is not necessarily proof that that is Michael. Let's go over to Exodus 19, where we find Yahweh's voice is described as a trumpet. Exodus 19 and verse 16. "So it came about on the third day when it was morning that there were thunder and lightning flashes and a thick cloud upon the mountain and a very loud trumpet sound, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. And Moses brought the people," and it goes on down to verse 19. It says, "When the sound of the trumpet grew louder and louder, Moses spoke and Yahweh answered him with thunder." So the voice wasn't necessarily thunder, though the voice wasn't necessarily the trumpet, but we have this thunder here that's mentioned. Now we find something in Revelation where Yahshua, of course, is addressing the assemblies, and we find that in verse 10, John was in the Spirit on the day of Yahweh. We find that this is in reference to like Joel 2, 1 through 2. In verse 3, it says the time is near. It says in verse 7, "Behold, he is coming." Yet this is a verse that's proof text and is shown to be, oh, it's the Sabbath. No, it's not the Sabbath. It's talking about the end time. But the interesting thing here is it says, "I heard behind me a loud voice like the sound of a trumpet." And it's again referred to as, okay, well, this shows that it's Yahshua as an archangel, the voice of an archangel. But that's not necessarily the voice. Go down to verse 15. "His feet were like burnished bronze," just like Daniel was talking about, when it has made to glow in the furnace, and his voice was like the sound of many waters. So the voice is like, it's sharp, it's distinct, can be like a trumpet, can be like waters, can be like a loud tumult. That doesn't necessarily prove that it's an archangel. And I don't think we can necessarily say that Yahshua is an archangel. I think he's a prince of princes. I think he's the great Yahweh of hosts. But to say that he's Michael, I don't think we can necessarily say that. Nor can we necessarily say that he isn't. And that's the quandary that we find ourselves in. Because it doesn't really say exactly. But in Revelation 11, in verse 15, it says, "The seventh angel sounded, and there was a loud voice in heaven saying, 'The kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of our sovereign and of his Messiah, and he will reign forever and ever.'" So we do find a trumpet blast that sounded. And it sounded from the seventh angel, maybe describing an archangel trumpet blast, I'm not sure. 1 Corinthians 15 and 52, this would be the last chapter verse we look at. 15:52 says, "In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed." And so this is something that we're looking forward to. And I'm sure at that time we'll find out just who Yahshua is. We'll see him as he is. will be given insight into, you know, about Michael, about Gabriel. Maybe we can even talk to them. Because they didn't fall. They didn't fall with Satan. Satan is ultimately going to be destroyed with his demons that followed him. And amazingly, a third followed him. But in looking at this subject matter, it's really a non-salvational issue. And since I've been here, I have not heard any messages given on this subject. And I think I can see why. No one wants to really touch it with a 10-foot pole. But it has been touched upon by others, and they've concluded that Michael is Joshua. I don't think we can necessarily do that, but there is evidence for that. And that's the interesting thing. There's also evidence against it. So we're left to wonder, and I think we have to keep an open mind about it and not necessarily say one way or another. It's not like the fundamentals of faith. The fundamentals of faith are something that we can look at, can see that this is this way and not this way, and that one item is this and not the other. The fundamentals of faith are foundational and very fundamental for us. But some of these deeper issues, like is Michael Joshua, to answer that question, it's a tough one. It brings up some things in Scripture that we don't necessarily look at, but that we probably should, and you know, glean what we can from it. But I think the thing that we need to go away with from this is that we have to keep an open mind and not be too dogmatic about it, but have an open mind so that Yahweh can work with us, help us. And for those things that He makes clear for us, we can walk forward with those. And these other things, you know, maybe we can put them on the shelf and let Yahweh work them out in our lives as we have questions and as we strive to do His will. Knowing whether or not Michael is Joshua or not does not hinder our walk. It may cause a question, but, I mean, questions are to help us think and to give us, you know, the ability to think about some of these things. So may Yahweh bless and help us as we move forward, certainly with the fundamentals of faith, the foundational faith that we have, and let some of these other things not take up all our time, as I have done with you today. May Yahweh bless.